Welcome to the J.P. Shadrick Podcast. Today is Tuesday, August 1st, and here's a look around the Jags organization. Today is the seventh day, officially, of 2017 training camp. We're a little over a week away from the preseason opener against the New England Patriots. We have plenty to get to. Associated Press writer Mark Long sits in for a little perspective on how this camp compares to the past around Everbank Field. We'll get some thoughts on Blake Bortles and the retirement of Brandon Albert, the Jaguars' left tackle. It's always interesting to hear Mark's opinion, whether you ask for it or not. First off, a look at the opening week of 2017 camp. The Jags reported for work Wednesday and hit the ground running with an administrative day. And then Thursday, they hit the field for the first time, facing humid conditions and a rapid pace without pads. And that combination surprised many players, as late in practice, there were guys locking up and hitting the ground nearly every snap with cramping issues. Some took IV fluids on the field and came back. It was an awakening for the team, according to Doug Marrone, who warned them ahead of time, as he said on the debut of the Doug Marrone Show last Thursday.
You feel the responsibility to make sure you tell the players because of, you know, your experience as a coach that, you know, hey, when you report, this is going to be difficult. This is going to be hard. You know, the weather down here, you're going to have to acclimate yourself to that. You're going to have to train. But I think, like you said, whether, you know, some people will train and wear a sweatshirt to simulate, and we haven't even put the pads on yet because we are in this acclimation period. I think it's something that it really does take a couple of days, you know, to get your body and then get your legs back underneath you.
The major topic of day one outside of the heat and tempo of practice was the play of Blake Bortles, the Jaguars quarterback. So far, so good early the first couple of days. There was a long way to go to bring what he did to California to camp and then into the games.
Going out there was just kind of grooving everything, making everything consistent, making sure, because you know, that's kind of, you go out there and you're throwing air, you throw, there's nobody around you, there's nobody coming at you, you're not thinking about anything, you're just throwing. So that's the kind of stuff you work on, and then you bring it out here and hope it holds up. And now when we get out here, it's about the thought process, the decision making, the accuracy, and kind of all the football-related things. So it felt good. Obviously, still a long way to go, a lot to work on. But I thought for day one, it was a good start.
On Friday, the second day of practice, the team seemed to adjust the elements. Personally, I did not see any players lock up or fall out during the 2.5-hour practice time. Now, keeping focus during a rapid tempo with all that is the next step for the Jaguars. The little things from time to time were an issue late, coming out with incorrect personnel, an offsides here, a false start there, a drop or two. But there were also a lot of good things on day two. Some big-time catches by rookie wide receiver Keenan Cole stood out, while Bortles and Allen Robinson's connections continued from day one. Robinson is facing a Jaguars secondary with two cornerbacks on the physically unable to perform list. That's Aaron Colvin and Jalen Ramsey. And for A-Rob, the battles against A.J. Boye have been good for both players.
Going up against A.J. each and every day is pretty fun. You know, I know for me, you know, talking to him as far as, you know, certain things that he does as a corner and the things that I do as a receiver, you know, we kind of communicate off each other, you know, off of some of the wins and losses, you know, to try to get better.
A little bit quieter going up against him
than Jalen. Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, everybody knows that Jalen talks a lot and things like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's always great work going up against either one of those guys.
There was enough talking between the two that they got in a small skirmish on the sidelines Saturday night during the first padded practice. And Saturday night, just as the Jags were getting their sea legs under them for the start of camp, another step up, that first padded workout is always tough. The Jags worked under the lights for the first time in camp for an audience of season ticket members only. The major storyline of that night was the 5-interception performance for Blake Bortles, which caught social media ablaze with criticism and concern. It's only one practice, and most of the 11-on-11 work that night was third-down situations, but it still was not the best look on the opening night of pads under the lights in front of season ticket holders. Well, something to watch moving forward, but how he responds to that kind of a night will be very telling. It was also the first look at defensive line versus offensive line drills, something you really can't simulate until the pads come on for real. We had live coverage of the drills on Jaguars.com Live Saturday night, and Jeff Lagerman and Tony Buscelli broke down Dante Fowler Jr. versus Brandon Albert and their initial impressions of the veteran left tackle.
Oh, not good by him. He reached for Dante Fowler. Brandon Albert reached for him, and any time an offensive lineman is going to do that as a defensive lineman, you're like, that's heaven.
Well, what happens when you reach also is your feet stop. It's very natural. Your butt goes up in the air, you straighten, your legs get straightened out, and your feet stop, and you can't move.
And I think that competition left tackle is real now. Brandon Albert, the first day that I watched him in training camp, his legs look like he's older. So he's got to kind of, hopefully it's one of those things where he's working into, a veteran player working into it. But the first practice that I saw him, and today the little bit that I saw him, you can tell he's got some miles on those tires.
The archive of that broadcast is available on Jaguars.com, and that was a little foreshadowing of what happened Monday morning when Albert, in a bit of a surprise, announced his intention to retire. The age, the work, and maybe the years banged up in the past, well, it all caught up with him early in camp, and Doug Marrone reacted after practice Monday.
Yeah, he came in this morning and told me that, you know, talking about retirement, and really, that's what transpired. I think that, you know, that conversation, I think you'd probably get a better answer to that question by talking to him and really asking him. I'm not going to speak for him. I'm just going to say what was said to me, you know, that, I'm going to retire. My mind goes on to the next thing, you know, like, okay, we got to get ready for practice. It's not something that was that happened last night where we had a lot of time to think about it. So I really haven't put a lot of thought into it. My thought was into, you know, practicing a rotation, the position, you know, things of that nature.
Did you have an inkling that he was considering this at all?
No.
Our guest today on the J.P. Shadrick podcast from the Associated Press, and he rarely comes in this room, Mark Long. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. Yeah, welcome back into this room. I've been banned for a few years.
Well, you're not banned, at least with us. You're glad,
okay, good,
we're glad
good.
To have you here. Good. It's good to visit with you each day on the practice field.
This is my first one in the revamped studio.
Yeah, what do you
looks
think?
Good. It's sharp.
Cool.
Yeah, no, it's high tech. Very lots of upgrades. Listen, Shad Khan is working his way through this stadium. He's obviously done a lot inside the stadium, inside the, you know, near the field there. He's done a lot in locker rooms. He finally got to this. I assume at some point down the road, he'll get to the media room, but it doesn't seem to be on the radar. We still have teal walls down there and a bathroom that half the time doesn't have toilet paper.
Well, at least you have a room still. Right?
Good point. And that might be, I guess I should be lucky.
I wouldn't hold my breath on that. Wouldn't put it past
somebody from kicking us out.
That's right. So this podcast airs originally on Tuesday. So happy Monday morning, the left tackle retires. How about that?
What a shock. I'm walking through the gate. I get the text. I got some news coming. I'm thinking, okay, somebody's hurt or Jalen Ramsey's coming off pup. No. 10 minutes later, the left tackle retires after 9 seasons and 3 practices. I mean, you know, it's welcome to Monday. But, yeah, I was shocked just like everybody else. Stunned. Stunned. Yeah, stunned is right. I just didn't see it coming, even though – he didn't necessarily look like he was in great shape, even though he wasn't here in the offseason and it didn't look like he wanted to be here. The reality was, anytime anybody retires 3 practices in, it's a little bit of a surprise. And he's the 5th guy, I think, in the NFL to walk away in the last 7 days.
Wow. It's very rare. It seems rare.
It does seem
right?
rare. And it is rare, but I think what we're seeing is it's becoming a little less rare.
Right.
And whether guys are walking away because of CTE reports, because of just the body's toll, whatever it is, obviously with it being 5 guys, 2 in New England, Andre Hawkins and Ninkovich, safety in Denver after 8 seasons, special teams guys, Bruton, I think it's David Bruton Jr., and then I'm missing one, John Uchtdol, the Baltimore offensive
lineman. That's right, from the Rams.
So, yeah, so he's the 5th guy literally in the last week. So, clearly, with all of them, I mean, coming to camp, showing up at camp, and then deciding to walk away. So, there's something here to be said. Either they show up and check on their body or just, you know, and it just doesn't respond the way they expect it to respond, and they say, I can't do it. Can't do it anymore.
That seems kind of the way Albert's might have gone. He wasn't here in the offseason. That was his own thing, whatever. It's not mandatory. And then he came back for the mini camp, and you could tell, and he said, man, I got to get used to this. I'll come back in camp shape. He comes into camp. And we had commentary early on this podcast from Saturday night, Jeff Loggeman and Tony Baselli, live analysis of pass rush drills where Fowler went right around him. And yeah, there's a lot of miles on those tires, Jeff said.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, listen, the guy looked old Saturday night. And, you know, he talked a big game a little bit. He got in some trash talk with those guys, but certainly didn't back it up. He looked a step slow. showed his age a little bit. And I think on Thursday, the first day of camp, he was one of the eight or nine guys who ended up in the tent there trying to recover from getting an IV, trying to recover from some cramping and dehydration, whatever it is, overheat, whatever. And he was far from alone. But again, when you look at it, he wasn't here except for the 3 days for the mandatory mini camp, wasn't here all off season, comes in looking a little out of shape, clearly out of shape that Thursday night, along with a bunch of others, and then getting his butt kicked Saturday night. It, from that standpoint, it maybe wouldn't surprise you or stun you that he stepped down. But I still think when you look at the money he's leaving on the table, that's the shocking part. Nobody leaves money on the table. There's even $8.8 million that was seemingly his. If he wanted to go through the drills, even if he was going to be a backup, that $8.8 million, the Jags would probably go ahead and give him as an insurance policy.
Sure, and it seems like this could be an $11 million swing because reports are he owes some money back in signing bonus.
Yeah, I don't know how that all works, but that would be totally crazy if he owes the Jags any money after six practices, essentially, with
True.
The team.
Right. Mark Long from the Associated Press is with us. Boy, what a day for Cam Robinson then. That increased his stock in the depth chart, it seems like.
Yeah, he should have walked out there and been the starter all day today, but of course, in fitting Doug Marrone, Tom Coughlin fashion, he walked out there and Josh Wells is the starting left tackle. So he's not going to be given the job, and that's Doug's point, and that's why he throws Josh Wells in there with the ones, is he wants him to earn it. And, Tom Coughlin and Doug Marrone see eye to eye on this, and they don't want to give rookies anything. They want to make them earn it. It's the reason Leonard Fournette's still behind Chris Ivory on the depth chart, still taking some snaps behind T.J. Yeldon. They're going to see what these guys do in games, get them through a bunch of camp practices, and then maybe elevate them. But nobody's going to just like walk in here and stumble into the starting job. And that was evident today with Cam Robinson, who by all accounts should have been elevated to starting left tackle. And he basically found himself in the same spot, splitting reps.
But he's going to be.
He will be. There's no question he's going to be the opening day starting left tackle. And same thing with Leonard Fournette. He's going to be the opening day starting running back. But getting there is not going to be as easy as we think it should.
You're starting five on the offensive line. This question, the answer to this question might be a little easier to decipher now than it was at 6 a.m.
Sure, much easier. I don't know what I would have said yesterday. I probably would have said some combination of Brandon Albert and Cam Robinson on the left side. Now I would say, obviously, Cam Robinson, your left tackle. I still put my money on Patrick Omame to be the starting left guard.
Certainly, really? He hasn't been with the ones, though, has he? Much?
Well, he was today.
On Monday
he was. Today.
Okay.
Yeah, today he was. And I just think that I know they like Shatley, but I still think for whatever reason, Omame, from a size standpoint, there's something about that guy, and the, he did play well when he did play.
Yeah, he's played games
last
in the
year.
League,
I think they like what he does bring, and then so I'll stick my money on him, and then obviously Brandon Leonard's going to be your center, AJ Cann's going to be your right guard. I think he'll stay there, and then of course Parnell at right tackle. So that would be my guys. I would pencil in Omame, but certainly, and then to me the three backups are Bowenko, Shatley, and Josh Wells. And you keep those are my eight, and anybody else, whether it's Patassi or somebody else, would have to shock me between here and the end of camp.
Mark Long from the Associated Press with us. Let's go back to Saturday night. The first padded practice under the lights, season ticket holders in attendance, over 4,000. What a crowd. What a night for football. And then Blake Bortles throws five interceptions in practice, two in seven-on-sevens, three and 11 on 11. They were working at third down situations a lot. He rebounded on Monday a bit, but the five picks is never a good look.
No, never a good look. I don't care if you're throwing against one-on-ones, against receivers, or 11 on 11. Five interceptions is unacceptable at this level for any quarterback, whether it's Blake Bortles or Tom Brady. I don't care. Five interceptions in this scenario is bad. I don't, you can be, even if you're trying to force it down the field all night, five interceptions is a bad look, and it's a especially bad look for him, given, he's coming off last year, and we all know this is make or break for him this year. So it's obviously, you know, stumbling out of the gate, getting off on the wrong foot, however you want to say it, just awful. And he's got a lot. One practice today doesn't make up for what he did Saturday night.
Devil's advocate, he had two pretty good days to start, right, the first 2 days, and then came back Monday with a solid practice, if you believe Ryan O'Halloran's statistics.
Sure.
It was a very good statistical day. I'm not into practice statistics, but the idea was that it was better than five picks. What do you make of it just being a bad day?
Well, and that's what you hope. You hope that it's just one bad day, and over the course of a year, you would take three good performances and four bad. If you said, you know, in the month of September, he's going to have three really good performances and one bad one, you'd probably take it.
Or three and one record, sure.
In the month of, October, November, all the way down the season, you would take it. But to me, it says, I'm looking big picture, and I'm going anytime he stumbles like that, turnovers. And here's what I'll throw out there. It wasn't so much that it was just five turnovers. They were working on third down. Well, mm-hmm. That's a crucial down in this league.
Sure.
Even worse is look where they happened. All five of them happened deep in his own side. Mm. So they would have been absolutely painstaking field position for the defense. One got returned for a touchdown, Telvin Smith. So, you know, that's right where we've been for 3 years. So from that standpoint, that's what – I mean, listen, if this is his rookie year and he has five interceptions on day three, it's okay, he's a rookie. But in year four, when you think he's doing all this work to improve his mechanics, to improve his decision-making, they're doing things to limit the offense, so less is more from him, and he comes out and do that, it's just – I mean, it's unbelievably eye-opening, eyebrow-raising, head-scratching, and as maybe Doug Marrone summed it up best, concerning.
At what point are you past all that, though? Is he past all that? How many do you have to line up together, or do you just have to wait and see in September?
I think absolutely. Week one at Houston is the best-case scenario for him and this entire offense to see what they've got against one of the better defenses in the league, certainly one of the better pass rushers in the league, or three of the better pass rushers in the league, right off the bat. So to me, that's when I don't care what he does in the preseason. I don't care what he does next week in New England. I don't care what he does the week after here against Tampa Bay. To me, it's a show me league, and for him, that starts week one. Now, what this does is just raise all those red flags back up for what we've seen the first 3 years, specifically mostly what we saw last year in year three, and it just raised all these red flags, and now you can't. He's not going to separate himself or move away from this until he starts winning games in the regular season.
Gives you something to criticize, too. You're so negative all the time,
yeah.
Mark.
Yeah, and listen, this team has given me nothing to be positive about ever. Well, 2007, been a long time. So, you know, this is par for the course for this team, this offense. As I tell anybody who will ever listen, JP, mm-hmm. that I've covered more bad offense between Gainesville and Jacksonville. I've covered my fair share of bad offense since 2007, 2008. Tebow was 2009. So since 2009 in Gainesville and since 2007 here, it's just been brutal. Brutal amounts of bad offense, bad quarterback play. So I should be used to it by now, but I'm not.
I'd be a curmudgeon too if I had to watch all that all the time. Mark Long from the Associated Press is with us. Is this a tougher football team?
We'll find out. I think we'll have a better idea next week against New England. I think we'll have a pretty good idea come Friday. Five straight days in pads. I think, you know, if he gets back to pushing him a little bit, I got to be honest. No, today was a lot of inside run, a lot of special teams breakdown. Saturday night wasn't all that tough either. Thursday and Friday were tough practices with an unbelievable tempo in and out. Lots of team drills. I think he backed off, probably smartly, Saturday night, backed off a little bit.
I think there's still intensity Saturday night. First padded practice in the trenches, that. Yeah.
And I thought you give him, you know, you give him Sunday off. I thought he'd come back and hammer him pretty good on Monday. He did not. I thought he let up a little bit, gave a couple guys. I think Parnell had a Veterans Day off. Calais Campbell had basically a Veterans Day off. So he gave a little bit of those. And there were a lot of people who were wondering, would Doug Marrone even give veteran days off? I mean, he's trying to change the culture.
That's right.
He's trying to change the toughness of this team. You don't necessarily do that by giving guys day off, but you got to be smart, and that's what he's proven, is that he's smart enough to know that these guys who are, you know, 30, 31, 28, 29, they don't need to or get anything out of practicing five straight days in full pads. It's for those younger guys, and we're going to see those guys. We'll see by the end of the week what those guys look like.
Famously, or I guess kind of infamous now, you asked at the opening press conference, why is winning important? And Tom Coughlin ripped you in front of everybody. And then again, the other day, day one of training camp, Wednesday, you asked the same exact question to Doug Marrone. Why is winning the first thing you ask about?
Not-
and again, he repeated what everything
Coughlin
said.
Listen, I want to see winning. There hasn't been enough winning around this franchise for the last decade. So, but that's not why. And it wasn't, and this is, you know, you're giving me a little bit of a bad rap here.
I wasn't asking
specifically why is winning important.
Well,
I did
ask why is winning the first thing you asked.
Why I asked why Doug is winning at this point, you're 5 months into dealing with this team, at why in your first message back is winning right off the top. It's not why is it important. I know why winning is important, and I also know why it's important for him. But I was just more curious as to, they hammered the winning aspect in April, May, June. They hammered it pretty good of why that winning is what they care about around here, that winning is, it's everything is about winning. Everybody should know that coming back in the building. I was a little more curious as to why he felt the need to reiterate it on day one. And he did. He said, listen, because I don't want to make anybody question whether or not it's the most important thing. And so therefore they all come back in and I'm going to say it again. So I would guess that, you know, they play on Sundays and they rehash that on Mondays. They take Tuesdays off. My guess is every Wednesday morning when he meets with that team, they're going to talk about winning
it's
in
how
some
we
shape.
Win this week.
Yes. How do we win today? How do we win this week? How do we win this game? And I think that's the message that he wants to portray. And for me, it makes for great sound bites, makes for great fodder. But I do like to know what he's thinking and how he's how he's getting that message across to the team. And it was very telling that the first thing he said, with these guys having, 6 weeks off, they come back in the building and his first theme is back to winning. So it's Tom Coughlin probably would sit in the back of the room and clap listening to him. So my question did catch Tom off guard. There's no question about that.
Yes, it did.
And everybody knows what I was getting at. And it wasn't trying to throw shade at Gus Bradley. It was, anybody who's been in this building for the last 4 years knows that winning was not talked about, especially not on a daily basis. We had a lot of catchphrases, tighten up. We had, what was it, get better, or a few others here and there.
Sure.
And we believe in victory. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like, this is just a ridiculous, roundabout way of talking about winning. So what's my question to Tom. It was almost more like, can you believe that we've been here 4 years and the previous regime didn't want to talk about winning? And Tom was incredulous that I would even suggest that somebody, he didn't know. Like, I really do believe that Tom Coughlin had no idea that winning or not talking about winning was an issue here. Now, maybe he did. I don't know. He spent a lot of time on Shad Khan's yacht. So maybe Shad and him had a conversation saying that, Gus didn't stress winning, blah, 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 blah.
Well, it was made pretty clear right away.
Yes. It has been made very clear between, coaches and the GM, the front office, and even the players. The players, it's welcoming for the players, because how do you not talk about winning? They're football players. You want to win. You want to win. You want to win games. Everybody wants to win games and get to the playoffs, and you don't do that by not talking about it.
You've been covering this team since 2004. That's 14 years, if I'm
this
math
is
correct.
This is
the 14th season coming up. How different is a Tom Coughlin, Doug Marrone building than the buildings that were here before, at least in your day-to-day job?
Well, I wouldn't know. I'm not allowed in the building right now. But the previous 13
well,
years,
you're in it right now. Oh, you're not I know, on
the previous 13
side.
Years, I was allowed in the. I basically had unfettered access. I could walk just about anywhere I wanted to go. The previous 13 years, so it is very different from that standpoint. I've never had to get an escort to walk to football. So there are certainly some constraints on the media. that are different than the previous 13. But where I expect to see the difference is I expect to see we talk about the hardened, tough team. That's what I expect to see, and that has not been the case here. It has been a country club for 13 years. Jack Del Rio ran a country club. Jack would sometimes, if the team didn't play well or didn't perform up to standards, Jack would kind of flip a switch and kind of drop the hammer on them. Right. All of a sudden, the ping pong table's gone. The TVs were turned off. They weren't allowed to play music. He would do that, and then he would lighten up and ease off. Or he'd all of a sudden he'd come out. They'd come out, and they'd be in full pads for a couple of days during the regular season if they didn't perform. But that was Jack, who, you know, was admittedly a roller coaster. The team was on a roller coaster. Jack was a roller coaster, up, down, this, left, right, changed all the time what he wanted, how he was handling the team. Gus Bradley was a lot more consistent, but consistent in the probably over the top, pat you on the back, slap you on the butt, and kind of keep you motivated type thing. This will be different. This will be much more consistent on the under my thumbnail. You know, under my thumb, pressing on you, trying to get you better that way by making you uncomfortable. Yeah. They want to create an environment of uncomfortability and see how people respond. A lot of guys will respond pretty well to that. These guys, most of these guys, at some point, whether it was in college or another NFL stop or high school, have been under the thumb pressed, and it probably, you know, works, and the kick in the butt will be motivational for them. It did not obviously work with the team that Gus and those guys had last year and the year before.
Mark Long from the Associated Press, kind enough to make his way down to a place he's never been, in a new studio. It's great to see you as always, man.
Thank
you
for having me.
I appreciate your time, man. It's always good to see you.
Thanks for having me, JP. I enjoyed it, and I'll come back anytime.
Coming up this week, 4 more full padded practices, all open to the public. Visit jaguars.com/training camp to register and get your free admission. Friday's practice is in the stadium for the annual family night. And then Sunday, the Jags practice and hop on the charter and head to New England for 2 days of work against the defending Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. That's ahead of the Thursday, August 10th game at Gillette Stadium. Jags Wired TV debuts Tuesday night. In the Trenches, presented by Gatorade, debuts on Jaguars.com Wednesday, and Jaguars Weekend TV debuts for the season this coming Sunday. Also, check out the Doug Marrone Show on Jaguars Thursday Radio this Thursday night at 6 o'clock on the Jaguars Radio Network. Video coverage on Jaguars.com, the Jags app, and social media accounts. You can also find all the post-practice coverage with live press conferences, Inside a Minute, and Senior Moments, the podcast with Brian Sexton and John Osier. That's all throughout the week. Our thanks to Mark Long for sitting in this week, and as always, a special thanks to Jags manager of radio, Joe Fortunato. Thanks for listening to the J.P. Shadrick Podcast.